Psalm 29 is probably my favorite psalm. And everyone's got, you know, the ones that everybody likes, right? Psalm 23, everybody likes it. Psalm 118, everybody should like it, right? But Psalm 127, it changed my life. It opened my eyes. It made me see that I was missing something in my American world of getting more for me. And the thing that I was missing was children. It's not that children are a law. It's not that in order to be saved, we must have as many children as possible, that that's the required obedience of you better go do it. There's people out there in evangelical Christianity that do teach that still these days. And given how much our world hates human life and does not want children, I can understand their knee-jerk reaction a little bit. But what convinced me that I should stop putting off having children and just receive a few from the Lord was the words of this text. The text itself could have been written by Solomon. It's got the ring of a lot of his proverbial language. There's similarities to some of the things that are said in the Proverbs. But it could also have been written during the time of Zerubbabel. You might remember this is when the temple is being rebuilt after the exile, Ezra and Nehemiah kind of time. And as they're building the temple, they are constantly under threat. The city really has not been reestablished. There is no wall. So it's a time where, as they're working with the trowel and the shovel, so to speak, they got to have a sword close at hand. Maybe even a shovel in one hand and an arrow in the other. And at such a time when the nations around them were really not wanting them back and continuing to raid, attack, trouble. What a time to have to be an old man without any sons. So in the midst of their fear about whether or not they would be able to build this temple and reestablish the covenant so far as they were able in the land, as they had been promised that they could do, it still remained that unless the Lord built the temple, those who would build it would be laboring in vain. And unless the Lord watched over them while they built, the watchmen would stay awake in vain. It would be in all vanity that they would get up early to do this work, that they would sit down late at the end of the day. It would only gain them more anxiety to worry about whether or not they could achieve this. And what I love about this proverb is how it just immediately applies to every life ever lived. If God is not the one laying out the course of your life, you waste your time. You can do whatever you want. You can plan as much as you want. If the plans are not His, they will break. You can build the greatest city that ever was. If it's not built by Him, or guarded by Him, protected by Him, it will fall. Every day in the rat race of the American dream, we all hasten off for what? An early retirement? To do what? Be alone? Watch some more Oprah during the day? It's in vain that the great bulk of the Western mind now anxiously hustles and bustles after what it believes can be the establishment of a permanent life. And yet, verse 2 tells us He gives to His beloved sleep. Now, I always wrestled with this one, because I don't sleep very well, to be honest. And so I was like, oh, I must not be beloved, right? See how the law gospel thing's going on there? How quickly the conscience rises to find a hook to accuse you with? If God really loved me, I'd sleep better. I was so thankful. I'd never learned this until when I was studying for this. And my favorite commentators, Kyle and Dalich, should tell you that it's gold, pure gold. They pointed out that it's less about that the sleep is the thing that is given. It's that God gives to you even while you're sleeping. so anxious world, you go ahead and rush off every day and come home late and give everything you have to building a castle made of sand. The fact is, the Lord will give the things which last to you even while you're sleeping. Like Abraham, who fell asleep as the torch moved through the cut covenant of animals, promising that the single sojourning man who lived in tents would become a great nation, one that would be the city, the New Jerusalem, that is the future, is the entire life of the world to come. With all of this wisdom being said, the psalmist then turns this and says, look, this is what family is. This is the problem with thinking that somehow, you know, I would take from this psalm that now I must go out and have as many children as possible, get my quiver as full as possible, because that's the right thing to do. Well, you're actually missing the point. You can't do it. You can't do it. Unless the Lord does it. It's all in vanity. See, you can have as many children as you want and be like Job and just have them all die. It's about trusting the Lord. About knowing that He's the one who is the author of all of this. And this is where then it is, it's not as if children are a bad thing. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb, a reward. Inheritance, a legacy, a gift. One of the sad things that is true about our culture today is how many women despise this gift, how they see the bearing of offspring for the future progenation of the entire world, the bearing of sinners to be baptized into the future life of the world to come, how they see this as sort of a secondary thing, not a very big deal, not that important, certainly not valuable, certainly wouldn't want to tell anyone they could dedicate their life to that without throwing their life away. That's the way the American dream talks, except on Mother's Day. But even then, don't have too many, right? It's kind of this weird anti-child thing. I'm not going to try to dig into all that here, but how different is this idea? That in the life that the Lord builds you, the gifts that He gives you, the greatest one, in this age, will be your family. Period. Other people, related to you, committed to you. And this is what flows from it, right? So, like arrows in the hand of a warrior, when the enemy is close at hand, what better to have by you than family? One you can trust, as close as a brother, because he is. So, yeah, blessed is the man who's got a full quiver, to be sure. Because he will not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemy at the gate. So, like, you got to imagine again. You're working on the temple, and you see a party approaching of various warriors. And so you hustle down to the gate, to the wall that you're still working on, but you go to meet at the gate. And up comes this group. Well, let's just say it's just 15 men, all with their swords drawn. If you're standing alone and you're 70 years old, bad place to be. And if you're Jacob and his 12 sons, now you got a phalanx. You got a wall of men all ready to speak with the enemy, not be ashamed, not be afraid of them, but to stand firm, to stand and to say, well, this house is built by the Lord. It's not as if family and making more people is the kind of good work that can earn you favor in God's sight. But this is what changed my mind. Again, you never could have changed my mind by telling me I had to do it. What blew me away, what opened my eyes, was to see that for all the world that I could try to earn, there would be nothing as marvelous as that moment when I would hold my newborn child, name him and her and her and her and her. And look into their eyes. There. There's no vanity. There. The wisdom of Solomon from the Proverbs that joins us in our thoughts about this morning actually connects pretty well. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 7. One pretends to be rich, yet has nothing. Another pretends to be poor, yet has great wealth. It's the same idea. The idea of misunderstanding reality. That's what Jesus is getting at in Luke's gospel this morning, too. We think that what we see right now is the real thing. You can't help it. It's built into you. It's literally our sin in many ways. When the reality itself, God, you're never going to see. He's invisible. If we can even use that word to describe him, he dwells in unapproachable light. No one has ever seen God, John tells us. The only God, Jesus, has made him known. So yeah, we can see God in the face of Jesus, and Jesus is God, don't get me wrong. But the Father, he's more real than everything else. Yet we think, whatever happens to me today, that's the real thing. We worry about tomorrow's daily bread because that's the real thing. We worry about clinging to our life here as long as humanly possible because that's the real thing. And none of that's the real thing. What did he say yesterday? Don't fear the ones that can harm your body. Because after death, it's not over, world, universe. I know that's kind of the popular... It's amazing how the American culture holds together a combination of belief in karma and a belief in nothing. As if these two can work together. That's the schizophrenia of the postmodern mind. After death, it's not over. And God who holds the power of death, who sent death as a curse upon this world to, well, trap us in our sin that we might be redeemed from it, frankly. He is far bigger than that death. It's like a toy on a shoestring for him. One he plans to destroy as well, by the way. And he holds the power to raise you from the dead whenever he wants. But he doesn't want to raise you from the dead just like you are with your trust in the present age. He wants to raise you from the dead with your trust replaced in the thing that is real. With the treasure kept hidden in eternity for you. With your trust placed in him alone. And that's why he sent his son to be crucified, to build mankind anew. And that's why he sends his Holy Spirit by words about this action taken by Jesus, that you might believe, that you might hope. So while the world runs around pretending to be rich, who doesn't want to be a millionaire? It's all dust. Dust in their hands, grasping at the wind. Can you catch the wind in a bottle? What happens? Nothing. On the day that we die, our plans perish. This is the wisdom of Ecclesiastes and Proverbs again. So true. But another pretends to be poor, yet has great wealth. The Son of Man had nowhere to lay his head, yet he was God in the flesh. And you, Christian, your faith alone in him, none of the rest of it, Not even your good works in response. None of the rest of it. Your faith alone in him is a glorious treasure. Worth far more than rubies, gold, silver, experiences, long life. Faith alone is a treasure kept in a jar of clay. Hidden. The world can't see it. You can confess it. The world still can't see it. The world will never believe. There will be people who become believers and are brought out of the world, but the world will never believe. It's kept in jars of clay. It appears to be poor. But you're rich. Far more wealthy, far more wise, far more prosperous, far more eternally healthy. I mean, do you get it? You're an immortal. And not the kind that's going to dwell in Hades. You're just waiting for that faith which is immortal to be clothed with the immortality of the flesh that Jesus has already demonstrated is perfectly possible and owned by him, your king. How sweet is that? What kind of confidence does that give? What's this world going to do to you? Huh? Catch wind in a bottle. That's what it's going to do. It's going to yell about it. Oh, look, we found $1 million. We found the answer to all things. No. No, the world's got good things. Don't get me wrong. Vocation, the creation, I love these things. We're free to enjoy. The issue is, well, it's always the issue. Where's your trust? In whom do you really believe? And the beautiful, beautiful piece about Christianity is that while you're sitting there then doubting, I'm not sure. I don't know if I really believe. Jesus comes along and he says, you believe in me. I promise. You believe in me. And I hold the keys to everything. You're listening to His Time, your morning drive for the soul here on Worldwide KFUO Daily Lectionary. Coming up next, going to go back, look at these passages of Luke. Good stuff, a little more angry Jesus today, but at the end, he's like giving you all sorts of gospel. Nothing to be anxious about in the world, even though we are, he's got it covered. It's always the same good news here on Worldwide KFUO. Stick around.